Michael Feinstein was a close personal friend of Rosemary Clooney and the Clooney family. Nick Clooney remembers.
When he began his career, which is, you know, really not all that long after he became the sixth kid, you know, was part of the family with all of Rosemary's kids. And Rosemary certainly encouraged him and critiqued him. She was not slow with their criticism, and of all of us, of anybody, if she thought that it was worthwhile. If she criticized you, she thought you were pretty good, or she wouldn't bother, wouldn't waste her time. She was a very strong supporter and a very important supporter. And, of course, he adored her. He just adored her. He thought she hung the moon, and every time she did one little phrase a little bit differently from the time she'd done it before, he would melt and faint, you know, and say, "Did you hear that? Did you hear what she just did? Do you know how hard that is to do?" And he was and is, he remains one of her greatest supporters, and she certainly was that for him. And, of course, he's family.
I met Rosemary Clooney because of a cat. Sounds funny, I know. I was working for Ira Gershwin, who lived next door to Rosemary. This was in Beverly Hills on Roxbury Drive, and Rosemary lived in a house that once was occupied by George and Ira Gershwin. And Ira, many years later, had moved to the house that was next door. Rosemary moved into that house in the 1950s after she married Jose Ferrer. And she had a cat that used to come over to the Gershwin house that would beg for food. And the reason it would come to the Gershwin house is because Mrs. Gershwin would put out shrimp, so every cat in the neighborhood would come to get the better food. And Mrs. Gershwin, who was quite a force of nature, said, "You have to go next door and tell Rosemary that she's not feeding her cat. It seems it's starving." I said, "It's not starving. You're giving it shrimp." Anyway, I went over, and that's when I had an introduction to the family. And then it was shortly thereafter that I got a message that Rosemary asked me to come over because I had helped her to get a quote for one of her albums that was the lyrics of Ira Gershwin. And so we met and immediately became bonded.
Fascinating rhythm, you got me on the go. Fascinating rhythm, I'm all a quiver. What a mess you're making, the neighbors want to know why I'm always shaking just like a flivver. Each morning I get up with the sun to find at night no work has been done. I know that once it didn't matter, but now you're doing wrong when you start to patter. I'm so unhappy. Won't you take a day off, decide to run along somewhere far away and make it snappy? Oh, how I long to be the one I used to be. Fascinating rhythm, got to stop picking on me.
Find a night no work has been done. I know that
Once it didn't matter, but now you're moving on. When you start to patter, I'm so unhappy. Won't you take a day off, decide to run along somewhere far away and make it snappy? Oh, how I long to be the one I used to be. Fascinating rhythm, fascinating rhythm, fascinating rhythm. Got to stop picking on me.
Rosemary let me go through all of her materials that were sort of helter-skelter in the house. She had such a broad career that a lot of the material wasn't organized, or things would turn up in the basement or other corners of the house. I'd open a drawer and I'd find something. And I found recordings that she had made with the Tony Pastor Band from Song of the South, radio transcriptions that she thought were lost, and she was thrilled when I found those. And I also found a bunch of these television pre-recordings she'd made with Nelson Riddle in the 50s, many of which were subsequently released on a CD, and Nelson Riddle was her favorite collaborator.
Just you, just me, let's find a cozy spot to cuddle and coo. Just us, just we, I've missed an awful lot, my trouble is you. Oh gee, what are your charms for? What are my arms for? Use your imagination, just you, just me. I'll tie a lover's knot round wonderful you. Oh, gee, what are your charms for? What are my arms for? Use your imagination, just you, just me. I'll tie a lover's knot round wonderful you.
Rosemary was a band singer in the sense that when she first started having any kind of real success, she was touring with the Tony Pastor Band. She was a band singer, she and her sister Betty, and so they were featured in the band, but they would usually have one chorus where they would sing and the rest was the band instrumental. That's the way it was in those days. The band would play a chorus, then there would be one vocal chorus, then the band would come back in. So she really considered herself to be, as she called it, a girl singer. And so she liked arrangements that gave the band an opportunity to play. And indeed, many of the players that she worked with throughout her career were alumni of the Tony Pastor Band. And Rosemary, in her early career, did not get to record the music that she preferred. She was signed to Columbia Records, and they were out to have hit recordings, and they wanted her to sing pop confections of that time. And the man who was in charge of the A&R, the artist and repertoire, he chose what people would sing, was Mitch Miller. And Mitch Miller forced Rosemary to sing novelties like Come On to My House or Baccia Me or Mambo Italiano. And Rosemary wanted to sing songs by Richard Rodgers and Jerome Kern and Ira Gershwin and George Gershwin and Duke Ellington. And she rarely had the chance to do that. So when she began what we call her second career after a recording hiatus, she had a nervous breakdown, and then she started recording again in the mid-70s, mid to late 70s. Then she was able to do albums of the songs she really loved, like Irving Berlin, Harold Arlen, Jimmy Van Heusen, and Cole Porter, and so on. And so she did definitive albums of these performers. In that period, she was considered the greatest interpreter, the greatest living interpreter of those songs. And Linda Ronstadt was a close friend of Rosemary's, and Linda would often ask Rosemary to coach her or advise her on how to sing a particular phrase or a particular type of song. With Natalie, it always came instinctively because Natalie is the daughter of Nat King Cole, so Natalie was more influenced by Nat than by Rosemary. But Rosemary was influenced by Nat Cole, so there is a lineage with all of them. And Rosemary loved to perform. It was something that made her so happy when she was singing the music, when she was performing the music. As she got older, she didn't have a good time physically. You know, she was very heavy. She was overweight, and it was hard for her to get around. But when she was on stage, no matter how she might have felt before she went on stage, she always had this connection with the audience that, brought a certain part of her to life in a special way. I heard Rosemary perform with a lot of different bands. Certainly, she worked with Count Basie and the Woody Herman Band. And John Otto, her longtime musical director, would always get the greatest musicians for her to work with. And so it was really thrilling to hear the fine level of musicianship that accompanied her, because the players were always so excited to work with her.
I'm the big band singer, standing up here all alone, on my own. I'm the big band singer, competing with a slide trombone. Hear him moan. Do you wonder who I am? Do you care? Or don't you give a damn? Do you ever look up and maybe wonder what I'm all about? That I doubt. I'm the big band singer, snapping my fingers to the rhythm. Hey man, I'm willing. I'm the big band singer, singing out your favorite song all night long. Turn on the blue lights and I can make you sad. Turn on the pink lights and I can make you glad. Turn on the radio, I got a song that's new. I'm the big band singer, singing my heart out for you. I'm the big band singer, snapping my fingers to the rhythm. I'm swinging with them. I'm the big band singer, singing out your favorite song all night long. Turn on the blue lights and I can make you cry. Turn on the pink lights and I can make you sigh. Turn on the radio, I got a song that's new. I'm the big band singer.
Rosemary told me that her album with Bing Crosby, Fancy Meeting You Here, was her favorite album, which I thought interesting that she chose her favorite as a duet album. Certainly the title track, Fancy Meeting You Here, is a marvelous, marvelous performance. I also love the performances that Rosemary gave on an album called Love, which was arranged by Nelson Riddle. There's a track on there called I Wish It So. That was a song by Mark Blitzstein, whom Rosemary was very fond of. And it's a beautiful performance. It's a song of great yearning and longing. And later, towards the end of her career, Rosemary revived that song and sang it again. Another song that I love by Rosemary is her recording of April in Paris with Nelson Riddle from Rosie Solves the Swingin' Riddle. Of her early career, in the period when she was stuck performing these pop confections, the day they were supposed to record Come On to My House, the harpsichord did not arrive at the studio, which was an important part of the orchestration of the number. So they suddenly had studio time on their hands and didn't know what to do. So impromptu, they recorded two songs. They recorded The Lady is a Tramp, and they recorded I'll Be Around. and I'll Be Around, which Rosemary recorded when she was only, I think she was only 23 or 22. It's a very, very wise and deeply moving performance and truly one of my favorites. I got an opportunity to record an album, my first album. I was still playing in piano bars, and the guy who approached me to make an album I thought was crazy. I said, who's going to buy an album by me? Yet he was insistent, and thank goodness he was, because it turned out to be a very successful recording. However, when I was getting ready to do it, I asked Rosemary if she would perform a duet with me, not only because I loved her so much, but it gave me a certain sense of security and comfort to have her part of the recording. And she agreed. I chose the song Isn't It a Pity because I loved it. It was a duet, and it had lyrics that had not been recorded before, so there was something special about it that would bring attention to it. So I remember that we rehearsed it at her house in the room where George and Ira Gershwin had actually written a lot of songs decades earlier. And then when we got into the studio, I was nervous. It was my first time making a major recording. And I remember Rosemary said, honey, when you sing, smile, because people will be able to hear it. And that was one of the first lessons she gave me. And I always think of that whenever I hear that duet.
Mm-hmm. did I wander here and there and yonder, wasting precious time for no reason or rhyme? Isn't it a pity? Isn't it a crime? My journey's ended, everything is splendid, meeting you today has given me a wonderful idea. It's a funny thing, I look at you, I get a thrill I never knew. Isn't it a pity we never met before? At last, it's like a dream, the two of us, a perfect team. Isn't it a pity we never met before? Imagine all the lonely years we've wasted. I at silly labors, what joys untasted, you reading Heine, I somewhere in China. Happiest of men, I'm sure to be, if only you will say to me, it's an awful pity we never, never met before.
While you were flitting, I was busy knitting.
How did you survive waiting till I'd arrive?
All my Dresden boyfriends were only half alive. A sleepy lad was Herman, and Fritz was like a sermon. Nicholas was such a bore.
How well I planned it,
I just couldn't stand it anymore. It's a funny thing, I look at you, I get a thrill I never knew. Isn't it a pity we never met before? Here we are at last. It's like a dream, the two of us, a perfect team.
For you're more than pretty, and I have charm galore.
Imagine all the lonely years we've wasted, you up in Norway, I around my doorway. What joys untasted. If you'd been handy, 'twould have been just dandy. Isn't it a shame we had to wait?
But thank the Lord, it's not too late.
Still, it's such a pity we never, never met before.
that's very nice, for so do I. Isn't it a pity we never met before? Put your hand in mine, a perfect fit. We never knew, just think of it. Isn't it a pity we never met before? Imagine all the lonely years I've wasted, fishing for salmon, losing at backgammon.
What joy is untasted? My nights were sour, spent with Schopenhauer. Let's forget the past. Let's both agree that I'm for you and you're for me. And it's such a pity we never, 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 never met before.
I certainly loved being on stage with her because we felt so safe with each other. We had a certain kind of comfort level that was very special. And she told me the only other person with whom she felt that comfortable on stage was Bing Crosby. I think I most miss the sitting around in her little den where we would just sit and talk. And she would tell me stories and I would pour out my heart if I was having problems or whatever issues were going on in my life in my 20s. And she was always there for me. She was very protective. And I think that it is just simply her friendship that I miss the most.
Award-winning jazz drummer Jeff Hamilton started his career with Concord Records in the late 70s, about the same time as Rosemary Clooney was reworking her own recording career. Jeff was a drummer on several of her albums with Concord.
Well, Concord was run by Carl Jefferson, who also owned a Lincoln Mercury dealership in Concord, California, and he loved jazz. He decided to put on the Concord Jazz Festival in a grassy area in a trailer. Jake Hanna might have been the first contact, but the first concert, I believe, was Joe Pass and Herb Ellis, Ray Brown, and Jake Hanna. And the record took off. That was Carl Jefferson's entry into the music business. So I was like, well, hey, I've got something here, and these are some of the greatest musicians in the world. So those musicians kept bringing their friends in, and the Concord Library kept building from that time. Jake Hanna was such an ambassador for Concord Records. He kept finding talent like Scotty Hamilton, Warren Vache, later on Tony Bennett, Rosemary Clooney, Bing Crosby. I mean, he just got everybody to come in and record for Concord. And Rosie trusted Jake, and that's why she started recording with Concord Records. And I didn't do many of the Concord records in LA. Most of the Concord records I did, even the Ira Gershwin with Rose, was on Mission Avenue in San Francisco. It was kind of a seedy part of town at that time. And there was a tremendous studio there with a great mixing. Phil Edwards was the engineer for Concord, and he had a mixing studio right next door. So it was very logical for Carl Jefferson to use that spot. And I had been sort of the a young talent that Carl Jefferson was trusting for the future generations because Ray Brown had hired me to join the LA Four. So I was 25 when I first recorded for Concord. But I was able to, in Carl's eyes, to play with the older guys. And so he trusted me on a lot of dates. And when Rosemary did her first couple of records with Jake Hanna on drums, he wanted sort of a different kind of group. I want to say the first recording I did with Rose was the Songs of Ira Gershwin on Concord. And that was a jam session band. Nat Pierce on piano, and I think Scott and Warren were on it. and we were just talking about tunes and let's do this song. And that's, you know, so Carl had said, now I want you to sing, because you're a kid, I want you to behave because, you know, we have a legendary singer here. And I said, look, I know who Rosemary Clooney is. I grew up in Richmond, Indiana. So I'm just over the line from where she grew up. So everyone was being careful around Rose. And I just walked up to her about an hour into the session and I said, Maysville, huh? And she looked at me and I said, Richmond, Indiana, I'm a Hoosier. And she hugged me. And it was like, oh, okay, we were okay from then. That was like old home week for us. So we got along fine. And we were kind of joking through the whole session. And as much as she would joke through the session, she was pretty serious in on that particular date because she had just come into the Concord fold. So she was being pretty careful and serious about what she did.
Let the drums roll out. Let the trumpet call, while the people shout, strike up the band. Hear the cymbal ring, calling one and all to the martial swing. Strike up the band. There is work to be done, to be done. There is more to be won, to be won. Come, you son of a gun. Take your stand. Fall in line, ye bow. Come along, let's go. Hey, leader, strike up the
Later on, I did these two other big band records with her, I guess still being trusted by Carl Jefferson to participate on the albums. And I had also worked with Woody Herman before I started recording with Concord, and Woody kept bringing me back in the band anytime that there were some rhythm section problems. And he'd say, get Hamilton out here for a couple of weeks, and I'd go out. And one of those dates happened to be during the record date with Rosemary Clooney, my buddy. John Otto was Woody's arranger, and so when this collaboration started, Woody was fighting for John Otto to do a lot of the arrangements on the CD because he was so proud of him, as he was through the years with Ralph Burns and Nat Pierce and Don Rader and a lot of the guys who had arranged for Woody, and then later on John Fedchuk. So Woody was really known for getting his guys work because he was proud of them. So John Otto was the arranger in the early 80s. So he wanted him to write a lot of the arrangements for Rose on that record. So, and I knew John from subbing on the band before, so we were very compatible, and he kind of knew what I would do with his arrangements from the drums.
Your poor heart break a little. That's the story of, that's the glory of love. You gotta laugh a little, cry a little, before the clouds roll by a little. That's the story of, that's the glory of love. As long as there's the two of us, we got the world and all its charms. And when the world is through with us, we got each other's arms. You gotta win a little, lose a little, and always have the blues a little. That's the story of, that's the glory of love.
As long as there's the two of us, we've got the world and all its charms. And when the world is through with us, we got each other's arms. You've got to win a little, lose a little, and always have the blues a little. That's the story of, that's the glory of love.
I was with Rose after the recordings at dinner, and she would hold court and was like Aunt Rose. It was just tremendous being in her presence, listening to her tell stories about Dolores Hope, what great friends they were, and, you know, show business personalities. And there was so much to learn from her. And she was funny. She's very, very funny and would go after you in a minute, very wittily. On the bandstand, she was the consummate professional. We kind of knew backstage to leave her alone right before the performance, and the band would go out first, and then when she would come out on stage, there was this charisma that was always there, but the sense of professionalism is what I always got from her. When she hit the stage, it was like, I've got to live up to this professionalism that she just walked on the stage with. And no matter how much of that you think you have, when someone is in your presence with that greatness, who learned that from Bing Crosby, for example, you rise to the occasion to meet that level of intensity and professionalism. At the same time, she was so relaxed outside, while inside she always said she was a little nervous. But on the outside, it was like, welcome to Aunt Rose's living room. I'm just going to make you comfortable and sing to you from my sofa for an hour. You know, so the first couple of times I played with her, it was an interesting mix of that, which I totally got into immediately to play her music. And as jazz artists and vocalists, I think we're all proud of the fact that, like opera singers, our voices get better, more mature. We know what to do with them the older we get. And sometimes we're not as aware of it until we get to that actual recording to document what we're doing. And then we listen back to it and go, oh, well, I didn't do that 5 years ago, or I didn't do that 10 years ago. It's a snapshot of where you are at that time. And sometimes other people see that snapshot before you're aware of it. So I think even more than ever, she knew what she could do. Even though she was never conceited or would brag about it, she knew that she could deliver something in a song that no one else could possibly do. And so she just did the heck out of what she did and let everybody else scat sing and do what they want to do. But she sang the melody and she got the lyric across, and she did it in a way that, again, it was welcome to Aunt Rose's living room.
How much do I love you? I'll tell you no lie. How deep is the ocean? How high is the sky? How many times a day do would I travel?
And if I
Debbie Boone, of course, her daughter-in-law, has Rose's book now and is continuing with John Otto to perform. And Debbie has a wonderful voice and is in that same mindset of how to deliver that song like Rose did. And I think she's a terrific singer of delivering the song, perhaps not as jazz-oriented as Rose was. But I don't think Rose really considered herself a jazz singer. Everybody else would kind of put her there. And it's why it was so funny that she was with the Concord Jazz label, you know, because she didn't really consider herself a jazz singer. And there's nobody that sounds like her. You know, if you listen to the radio, now there are stations where you hear just singers or vocalists and then just big bands. And you never fail a blindfold test when it's Rosemary Clooney. It's an identifiable voice. It's a comfort. It's a smoothness. Her intonation is impeccable. Her phrasing is perfect. You understand every word that she says. And there aren't a lot of singers who can do that. So all of that jumps out of the radio and makes her very identifiable. And I think that's her legacy, is that she wasn't afraid to just sing the melody the way she felt it should be sung properly, the way the songwriter wrote it, and with her inflection, and to make sure that people understood the words that she was singing. And she never got in the way of the band. If there was an ensemble that was smoking, I mean, you've got Nelson Riddle's arrangements that are wrapped around her, and they're just, you know, it's like, okay, go tell the singer to sit down for 16 bars. I want to hear the band. She was smart enough to recognize how great that was, and I'm going to sound better if I stay out of the way until it's time for me to come in after they finish what they're doing. And there are a lot of younger vocalists who feel like they need to scat over the band or sing the lead trumpet part with the band. You don't need to do that. Let the band shine, take a breather, and then you're going to sound like $1 million when you come back in, because we're setting you up to come back in. So we won't stomp all over you. Don't stomp all over us. And Rose knew not to do that. She wasn't selfish at all. I felt like we had to urge her to do things. And no, go ahead. You sing two choruses on this. You don't have to just sing one. And don't just sing the bridge out. Sing the whole melody out. People want to hear that. Well, do you think so? Because I, you know, that kind of thing. And she was very humble. And her shows later on became stories about the family and interjected in between the tunes. And she loved talking about her grandchildren. There was one story where she had just had a knee replacement and were playing for an older audience. And they all, of course, could relate to this. So her grandson is asking her about the knee replacement and what do they use for the knee replacement? What material? And she's saying, you know, titanium. And, well, is that metal? And she says, well, yeah, kind of. She's trying to explain to him as best she can. And he disappears, and she wondered what happened to him. He comes back with a refrigerator magnet, and he's trying to stick it on her knee to see if it's really metal. You know, so those kind of stories really touch the audience about, you know, hey, she's just like us, but she just happens to sing better than we do, you know.
That old man River, he must know something, but don't say nothing. He just keeps rolling, keeps on rolling along. He don't plant taters, he don't plant cotton, but them that plants them is soon forgotten. Old man River keeps on rolling along. You and me, we sweat and strain, bodies aching and racked with pain. Tote that barge, lift that bale, get loaded, gonna land in jail. I get weary, sick of trying, I'm tired of living and fear to dying. Old Man River just keeps rolling along. Tote that barge, lift that bale. Get drunk, you're gonna land in jail. I get sick, and I'm tired. Tired of living, fear to dying. But that old man River just keeps rolling along.
Cincinnati native and jazz vocalist Amy London, who now lives in New York City, spoke about her memories of Rosemary Clooney.
I was a big fan of all those Concord records from the 70s and 80s, and that's really more where I heard Rosemary. I didn't hear her much in her youth. I heard her more in the later stage of her life when she was on Concord Records, and I always enjoyed those records, and I loved how she could swing a story. She could tell a story very honestly and very soulfully while swinging at the same time, which is a goal, I think, for jazz singers, to be able to swing and tell a story at the same time. And then, of course, once I learned about her in the 80s, when I was just coming up in New York, then I started watching the old movies, and I saw White Christmas and some of the older movies that she was in when she was young and in Hollywood. But here's the funny connection, 6 degrees of separation, it's a small world. When I was growing up in Cincinnati, at a certain point, when I first heard jazz, which was really pretty much at Walnut Hills High School, watching the big band on the stage, and I decided that I fell in love with jazz and wanted to learn more about it. I think I was about in the 10th or 11th grade. Up till then, I had been a folk head, you know, James Taylor and Laura Nero and Joni Mitchell. And at that point, I became a young jazzer. So I found a wonderful piano teacher who taught at Vernon Manor. His name was Frank Wolfe. And a lot of people studied with Frank. He was a very interesting pianist, and he had a very interesting way of teaching jazz to young students, in which he would give you a standard, and then he would give you these different improvisational ideas that he had written down so that you could start out with your left hand playing a big octave and then play a big arpeggio and then play the melody and then play a diminished chord. And he had all these things written out so that you could pick and choose your arrangement, which ended up sounding like an improvised arrangement, but it was a great way to learn. So at a certain point, about 2 years into studying with him, I think I studied with him for 2 to 3 years, 10th, 11th, and 12th grades. I was in 12th grade. I told him I wanted to sing jazz. That was my first dipping my toe into the waters of singing jazz. So he sent me to Milt Wiener. Milt Wiener had been, I believe, the musical director at WLW in the 40s, and he directed Rosie and her sister, and he also taught Doris Day. So I had only 3 lessons with Milt in my senior year of high school, and it was a very interesting experience. I think he had a little studio in the Alms and Depke building. I can't remember. I remember my dad driving me downtown and going to some little piano studio in one of the older buildings downtown. Milt used a reel-to-reel tape recorder, and I still have the reel-to-reel tape that we recorded onto. He recorded the lessons, and we only worked on one song that I can remember, which was Autumn Leaves. And Milt was the first one to tell me to, A, put it in my key, which is not the original key. All female singers have to change keys from the original keys because the original keys are a fourth away from where they need to be for women, generally speaking. But he was, more importantly, the first one ever to teach me about phrasing and about speaking a lyric, which is so important in telling the story. We worked a lot on that. I mean, we spent the 3 weeks on that one song. And it was a huge lesson for me in singing jazz. It really got me started off on the right foot for the expression of jazz coming from the lyric and the arrangement coming from the lyric. And really everything that you do with a tune needs to come from the lyric. And it's something that I've continued to use in my own singing and in my own teaching as well. So that was a very valuable time for me. And Milt was very old by then. I would say he was in his probably mid-80s, I would guess. And he used an ear trumpet. He was a little hard of hearing, and he had this ear trumpet thing when I would sing, and he would stick it in his ear and put the reel-to-reel tape recorder on. It was quite an experience, and he was charming and adorable, and I really loved what I learned from him and loved the time that I spent with him. So somewhere, I think in the late 80s, there was a made-for-TV movie about Rosemary Clooney's life, and I watched it. And in the movie, there was a character named Milt Wiener, who was the musical director at WLW. And not long after that, Rosie was playing at the Blue Note downtown in Greenwich Village in Manhattan, and I went to see her. And I went upstairs to the dressing room to meet her. I knocked on the door, and I introduced myself as being a fellow singer from Cincinnati. She was very friendly and very warm to me, And I, of course, complimented her on her show, which was wonderful. It was wonderful to see her perform live. We chatted about Cincinnati, and I said, you'll never believe this, but I actually had a few lessons with Milt Wiener a few years ago. You know, we laughed about it, and we, you know, discussed about how sweet he was and how much we enjoyed knowing him. And so it was a very special moment for me to meet Rosie. And, of course, it was wonderful that she was so nice to me and so sweet. And she was one of the great swinging singers of the Great American Songbook.
Anyone with the right approach could have won you without a coach. It just happened to happen to me. Each young girl with a grain of sense could have tumbled down your defense. It just happened to happen to me. You passed by my doorstep, I fell in with your step, stayed there just one step behind. You turned into my arms, I gave way to your charms, said to myself, the harm's done. All those girls with their hopeful eyes better look for another prize, 'cause it just happened to happen to me. It happened that you fell in love with me. Sparkle and shimmer, my heart can't forget how you looked. I tried to resist you, but after I kissed you, I realized my goose was cooked. Though some say it was happenstance, darling, you never had a chance. I made sure that it happened to me. It happened that you fell in love with me.
Rosemary Clooney would have been 85 on Thursday, May 23rd. What a legacy she's left her fans with. If you'd like to learn more about her life, you may want to travel along the Ohio River to Augusta, Kentucky some weekend and visit the Rosemary Clooney Museum, which was her home for over 20 years. I'm Bill Cartwright, and you've been listening to Rosemary Clooney, Big Band Singer. This special was produced for WVXU and WMUB by Lee Hay, with technical assistance from Kevin Rowinski.
85, huh? How about her? She would have been a great old lady. Just great. One of the best.